so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we've made it to another week. It's time for the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today?
Good. I should warn you and everybody, I suppose, that my fan is just stopped working. Or more accurately, the button stopped working that turns the fan on. I think the fan still works if I could somehow turn it on.
Why would you be warning us of this?
Well, because the upshot of that unfortunate fact and the unseasonably warm Bay Area weather is that I am in an open studio, so to speak. And I'm going to do that until...
Are you naked or something?
No, no, just the doors are open. So you might hear cars driving by or honking if that should happen, a siren potentially. You know, and I'm just going to kind of roll with it until it becomes a problem.
Okay. I think we can all handle that.
All right, cool.
Let's we got some things to talk about. They're definitely like, you know, it probably doesn't feel like fall where you are, but fall is basically here, right? It's like stuff is dropping, you know. This week,
whatever you say.
No?
Well, it's like 85. It was 90. It was in the 90s yesterday in Berkeley.
Oh, it's 85 here too, but the long shadow of cooler weather in Minnesota is certainly here.
Yeah, for all I know, it's going to be 85 all winter because there's no such thing as weather patterns anymore.
Yeah, it's true. But that's a topic for our other podcast, Weird Weather Prognostication Weekly.
It's called the Try Not to Kill Yourself Department.
All right, so we're going to get into some NFL. We saw a movie. There's a couple new TV premieres that we wanted to discuss, but before we do any of that, you have some podcast idea. Now,
we're going to do it at the beginning. Okay.
We have sort of an ongoing pre-show meeting. Like, there's no meeting with us, but, like, you know, we're in touch during the week talking about the pod and what we're going to watch and what we're going to talk about, and then we talk a little bit before. In any of those conversations, you haven't mentioned whatever this thing is that you're about to spring on me. So this is a very exciting moment for me.
Well, I just thought about it last night because I was, let's see, maybe like 1 a.m. or so. I was doing the old Netflix browse, you know, where you like comb through the innumerable things you've added to your list and never watched and... for whatever reason, I don't feel like watching that stuff. And then you're like, what's new?
I'm not really a list guy. I don't, you know, I kind of just jump in one thing at a time.
I have to tell you, like, I can count the number of times I've actually used my list to watch something that I haven't seen on one hand. But I do have an extensive list. But I operate the same way you do. It's just occasionally I see something and I'm like, I don't want to watch this, but it does seem interesting. And then I add it to my list.
Gotcha.
Which brings me to what I want to do. Which is just, like pick, and I'm down to alternate choosing or I'm down to just make these ridiculous choices. But like, there is a lot of stuff on Netflix that, I mean, it doesn't look bad, but I do look at it and wonder who is watching it. Some of them are Netflix originals. Some of them seem to be movies or shows that I just missed when they came through the real world. But I'm not talking about like the Netflix original shows. I'm talking about movies that are either Netflix originals or things I didn't totally know about, or even things I meant to see and didn't get around to that are a little off the beaten path.
So your idea is just watch something random on Netflix every week?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Because like, who's watching these movies? I don't know, but are some of them good? Perhaps.
Okay, that was a lot of buildup for that.
Yeah, that's my whole idea. Just like, okay, right now, I'm looking at a movie that says it's from 2014. It's David Cross's directorial debut, a small town satire starring Matt Walsh, featuring Michael Cera and David Koechner. It says, plumbing the depths of American culture in the internet age, this mordant comedy takes its humor from the trials of a municipal worker named Dave. And that's all I've got here. I don't know why I chose it. It's called Hits, and the sort of cover image is a young lady with a shotgun.
Doesn't this sound like something that they made to put out, you know, with the studio, and it and just decided to throw in the can, and it wound up on Netflix?
Maybe, yeah. But David Cross directorial debut, it could just be a like misunderstood dark comedy. I don't know.
All right.
I'm not saying that's the one we should watch. Here's another one that was much more mainstream, the 2008 documentary The Wrecking Crew. Did you ever see that?
No.
Like, this is the sort of stuff that's on my list.
Okay. I would like to suggest that if we take this on, that we do this maybe more like once a month fashion.
Yeah, that's probably more reasonable.
Because like I said, things are about to get real busy, and I blew off Monday Night Football last night to go to the movies.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Because that was the only time I had to get that assignment in. You know what I mean?
Well, so. I appreciate your commitment. I would tell you, you missed very little in the way of entertainment as it regards Monday Night Football.
Yeah, I got very little in the way of entertainment as it regards to the movie, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it, because
we should probably tell people what the movie is.
Steven Soderbergh's movie Logan Lucky is getting pretty great reviews, I would say. And it's like, okay, here's what A.O. Scott, notoriously picky and, in my opinion, relatively obnoxious, A.O. Scott of the New York Times. Here's the poll quote. Logan Lucky, Steven Soderbergh's gravity-defying, ridiculously entertaining new film, which ends a blessedly brief retirement, concerns itself with a desperate attempt to even the odds. So, I realize that's not much in the way of a review. The point is, those eloquent adjectives that A.O. Scott uses, gravity-defying, ridiculously entertaining, that, to me, describes the vast majority of Steven Soderbergh's movies.
Yeah, can I give a review of that? Can I give a pull quote to the pull quote?
Sure.
Derek Madden questions A.O. Scott's sanity.
A.O. Scott, I don't understand. That, like, I didn't hate it. It sounds like you did. I didn't hate it, but gravity-defying and ridiculously entertaining, I think in general, but certainly stacked up next to the Steven Soderbergh oeuvre, it is not.
Yeah, I didn't hate it either. I just, like, I found it to just be thoroughly meh. And like you, I am a big Soderbergh fan. I love a good caper movie. And in fact, Out of Sight is in one of my, like,
one of my favorites, yeah, too.
All-time, like, rewatchable, you know, like, in theory, I was all in on this. It's a great cast, and then you get there, and it's just one of those things that, like, doesn't add up to anything. The plot isn't...
That's right.
The plot isn't... I mean, you know, the caper itself isn't particularly thrilling. The characters in it aren't particularly interesting. And then the performances... Like, just the performative, look at us, we're down-home country West Virginia folks, aspect of this movie was so off-putting to me. And I just felt like I felt the, you know, I'm not normally a guy that's picking out accent work, but, like, God, the accents were so... brutal and fleeting in this movie. And you know, like, I don't know what Adam Driver was doing. That's a guy who I've liked in pretty much anything. And particularly, I don't know how you felt about this, but, like, what choice was Hilary Swank making? Like, what was going on with her line delivery for the, like, her, you know, she's not in the movie for a ton, but, like, she spoke in this, like, weird cadence with this, like, weird half accent.
Also, like, what it, I mean, slight spoiler alert, let's not talk too specifically, but, like, what is her character thinking?
Yeah, I don't...
Over the course of the movie, it ended and I was like, I don't get her game. What's really going on? And I think you said it perfectly, like, everything about this was meh. And like you said, I mean, you see the cast and all of the... Channing Tatum, Adam Driver, Daniel Craig, Katie Holmes. These are people I like in almost everything.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that they were bad. They're all good actors, actresses, etc. Check it out. But they just were meh. And everything felt very... In a movie that, you know, purports to be a high-stakes... gravity-defying caper, everything felt very low stakes.
Yeah.
The performances felt, I don't know if mailed in is the right way, because again, I don't even feel, they felt, whatever, how would you say mammothian as an adjective?
Yeah.
Mammoth-ish. They felt like, it felt like someone told the actors, just read your lines. And, like, if you feel like doing an accent, go for it. If not, no big deal.
Yeah, there was a lot of just kind of like, eh, you know? And I don't know if that's some of the, like, the Soderbergh kind of, like, handheld. But I don't think of him as sloppy. And this movie felt sloppy in some ways. Like, ridiculously entertaining is baffling to me.
Yeah, and I don't think of him as, it's you know. Sadly, and I hate to say it after what we did to this movie, but I don't think it's as good of a movie even as Dunkirk. But it feels my criticism thematically feels in line with what we said about Christopher Nolan as it regarded Dunkirk, which is this is not a director that we go to the film expecting purely visual tricks from.
Yeah.
This is someone who has gotten great performances out of actors in their films. This is someone who has managed intricate and intelligent turns of story and plot and character development that is intriguing and sucks you in rather than leaves you feeling hollow. And this was like, it was the visual tricks of a Steven Soderbergh movie. It's visually recognizable, but it's kind of all style and no substance.
Yeah. I just, and you know, sorry, those noises kept popping up because I kept getting autoplay ads on Metacritic trying to look up the cumulative critic score. But 78 for Logan Lucky on 51 reviews. Just to give you some context, Logan, which critics loved and you loved particularly, was a 77. Right. Baby Driver was an 86. I thought that was an infinitely more entertaining movie than Logan Lucky. And then Dunkirk is a 94. So, one of the better reviewed movies of the year. And I don't totally get it. And again, I like almost everyone involved in almost every other thing. And I just felt this movie kind of added up to nothing. Like, my pull quote for the movie I couldn't wait to look at my phone.
Yeah, I mean, right. I think you probably were more, because I can enjoy what happened, but from an expectation standpoint, based on the reviews and my affection for the participants, it was a disappointment, unquestionably.
I'm curious,
I am surprised, much as I was with Dunkirk, I am surprised at how willingly the supposedly highbrow critic community. It's like, you know what? This is weird. Here's a weird thought. Over the last, I would say, 5 years, the ostensibly highbrow critic community, for the most part, although generally not guys like A.O. Scott, but for the most part, the ostensibly highbrow movie critic community has opened its mind up to giving very, very good reviews to movies whose goals are not particularly ambitious, like Mad Max, or rather to a movie whose goals are ambitious in scene and action and entertainment, but not in story or character.
Well, I think critics have a thing, and I sort of do too, to be honest. But critics have a thing for highbrow takes on genre films. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, but here's the distinction.
That's
I'm
the Mad
make.
Max thing, I guess, would be what I'm saying.
Well, I think critics did not have that in the movie world for much of my lifetime. I think that's a relatively recent development for people who consider themselves true film critics to be able to have the appropriate expectations for a film like Mad Max Fury Road and thereby review it incredibly highly because it did exactly what it set out to do and it did it at an extraordinarily high level. And yeah. I think that's great. I think that's a great development. But unfortunately now it seems to me like these critics are unable to distinguish a film like Mad Max that has ambitious goals in a particular arena and succeeds from a film like Logan Lucky, which has Steven Soderbergh doing the visual things that he does, which are gripping in their own way, but failing at the part that he's also supposed to do, you know, and Christopher Nolan doing this visual, this stunning visual thing, but leaving you, and maybe that at least is more in line with his goals, but it still felt like a half effort from someone we know is capable of crafting great story and character.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get why. Like, obviously, neither of us like Dunkirk, and I think we've kind of gone into that a lot. But I can at least see why other people did. You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
I totally. And I can particularly see why critics did, because it feels really edgy and experimental, and visually it's fantastic. Like, there's, you know, it...
Exactly.
Visually,
exactly.
It's great.
That makes more sense, the critical reaction, although I still think it was extreme.
A 94 is crazy. But you know, this movie, like, I don't... it doesn't quite... I mean, look, it's interesting visually, and Soderbergh is obviously... He's Soderbergh. He's great. But, like, it's not remarkable in any way, I don't feel like.
So here's what I would think of. And I don't know whether – I guess I can Google Metacritic. But when Burn After Reading came out in 2008, I think it was better than Logan Lucky, but similar from the perspective of not necessarily – The caper was not necessarily up to the Coen brothers' standard.
Yeah.
And
Burn After Reading was a 63.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Burn After Reading was a 63 in 2008. I think it's a better movie with a lot of with similar problems. This incredible cast that doesn't necessarily feel expertly utilized. A complicated caper that doesn't necessarily get you that excited. It really... And great directors and writers at the helm of it. It's really very similar, it sort of, again, from like a critical thematic standpoint. And it was, you know, 70-something on Rotten Tomatoes and 63 on Metacritic. And I think that is a change in how – I don't know if it's just a diluting of the critic pool and people not being as picky – but it certainly feels like a change in how things are received more than a difference in the level of quality of these movies.
You know, I think some of it, honestly, is a business thing in that more and more, right, is the business shifts in these ways where these genre blockbusters are more important. You know, it's not the 70s and you know, Robert Altman talkie movies are not really in. You know what I mean? Like, you can't really do those. And so more and more our tours... you know, working on things like Star Wars or original properties in this vein. And so I think there's a temptation, you know, on the critics' part to take a name and see a value. And look, I'm not really here to critique criticism because any film critic knows far more about movies than I do. Like,
probably,
you know, I didn't,
hopefully.
I didn't go to film school and I, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't do any of that stuff. So, but I think that's where it is. I think this is happening because more and more directors are doing these kind of genre picks, and so
maybe.
It's
but
break
I
highly.
Think they can be better. I think both in the case of Steven Soderbergh specifically, because that's the movie we're talking about. There's a better version of Logan Lucky that Steven Soderbergh could have made in my mind. And yeah. I don't know exactly what happened here, but it just, again, for me, this was like a mildly entertaining movie that I expected to be super entertaining.
Yeah. Like the idea that this, the guy that made this is the same guy that made Ocean's 11 or Out of Sight.
Or even, Christ, even Magic Mike.
Yeah, I was just thinking, it's totally missing all the fun of those movies.
Absolutely. Or it has like a, it has like a children's sketch or like a pencil outline of the fun, but it's not colored in.
Yeah, it's very weird. Because I love Soderbergh and I was excited to see this movie and I just watched.
I mean, I love The Nick. Did you watch The Nick? Did we talk about that on the podcast?
We had not talked about The Nick on the podcast. I have seen. I think I saw most of the first season. I don't have Cinemax.
And
so I dropped off somewhere.
That show is slow and intense, but I thought excellent. And again, painted in such full color between the lines, where this really does feel like a sketch outline.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go deep. I watched K Street. I liked Girlfriend Experience. Like,
yeah,
I'm down. I'm down with Soderbergh. But not so much this one. That was a bummer.
Yeah. But I can't say it was worse than Monday Night Football, to be totally honest with you.
All right. We should talk about the NFL Week 1. And I don't fully know how to do this. To give you guys who are listening some context, we had a 15-minute argument about Colin Kaepernick on last week's show that we just decided to take out because we're all tired of hearing about it and talking about it, and I don't know how much new that we added to it. But, yeah. Like, I don't know how to talk about, you know, this week in the NFL without looking around at the putrid quarterback play and going, I mean, come on!
37-minute Colin Kaepernick debate redacted.
I don't even care anymore. All I know is that I'm looking around. And maybe this is where, when we cut this out of it, we can jump back. All I know is that I'm looking around the league, and week one, the quarterback play, for the most part, was pretty lousy. And some of those guys may have settled situations, and somebody had a bad game or whatever, but there were some disastrous quarterback play in week one, a week when typically the offense is ahead of the defense, no?
So this is correct. So this is why I should say, to be perfectly clear and hopefully avoid further debate on this topic, what I should say is that if I had had control of an NFL team and any wherewithal with my quarterback position, I would be uninterested in signing Colin Kaepernick. If I was handed one of several NFL teams, it's inexcusable to not have this guy on the roster. It's inexcusable. And you know, you said the Texans, based on what we saw in week one, I disagree, but who knows what that was with all the stuff going on in Houston and the situation those guys have had to deal with, I can't really imagine. So if that defense is as good as we thought it was coming into the season, then that is a potential team where Kaepernick would be interesting. I think we're seeing pretty quickly that the Arizona Cardinals are a team that has theoretically a lot of pieces in place to be a decent football team, a contending football team. And I don't think Carson Palmer is up to the task. You know, I respect the Browns going with DeShone Kizer. It is what it is. And they're
me too. I don't want to look something. You got a young guy, try him out. That's fine.
You're
drafting him high for a reason. I get it. But
again, after week one, it's confusing with the Jaguars. I'm literally going to go through because I think it's actually kind of remarkable how many teams have trash. The Jaguars, I guess you stay with Blake Bortles as long as you're winning 29-7. But coming into the season, it's hard to imagine how Colin Kaepernick couldn't fit on that roster. Andy Dalton is truly terrible. It's hard to imagine how Kaepernick wouldn't fit on the Bengals. The Jets, good Lord, hard to imagine how he couldn't fit. The Colts have just ruled Andy Luck out for week two.
Mm-hmm.
hard to imagine how they couldn't use him there.
Yeah, well, look, and they traded for Brissett, and we, you know, whether or not you believe in him, at least they, yeah, at least they're trying something, I guess.
Okay, so even if you take them off the list, I mean, the 49ers can't sign Colin Kaepernick, but they don't have a quarterback
right
on the roster. I'm actually okay with the Broncos, but boy, I you know my stance on Eli Manning in general.
I think by definition, if you are signing Brock Osweiler, then you don't have your quarterback situation solved, and Colin Kaepernick could at least help you on the roster, whether he's starting the game or not.
Maybe that, but that's a more complicated question. I think more importantly, there's no question about those other teams.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about the Jets, about the Texans right now, about the Jaguars probably. That,
and that's before you get to teams where he could be a backup.
That's right. And there's no harm if you're the Jaguars. There's no harm in messing around with it.
Yeah.
Especially if the defense is as good as it looked in week one and as some people think it may be, because they've certainly spent the money to have a competitive defense.
Right.
And Blake again, Bortles doesn't play defense.
Your stated desire is to run the ball as much as possible. So
that's right. That's right. So a guy who has had success in an option type system, it's hard to see the downside. That's why I'm convinced that there is either an actual or an effective blackball. It's what do you do? But on the other hand, what are you doing if you're the Jaguars? And is it maybe just stupidity?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
What have you ever been doing?
That seems to be the most obvious situation. And look, yes, if you're running the Jaguars, you don't think Colin Kaepernick is, you know, it's not like, oh, we got him, now it's Super Bowl. No, he's warm in the spot until you draft your guy. But it's still an upgrade, right? It's got to be an upgrade. And it's probably not now because, you know, he'd have to learn the whole system. But
which has not been a strength.
Right. The guy's obviously been sitting there the whole offseason, though. You know what I mean? So, all right.
It's very difficult to understand given some of the guys who are. I mean, Scott Tolzien, really? Yeah.
Let's take this out of the lens of Kaepernick for a minute. We'll stay on bad quarterback play, though. Do you think the league is going to be more or less entertaining this year based on what you've seen in week one?
Oh, boy. I think it's going to be plenty entertaining, and I think there's going to be plenty of drama in the standings, because I think a great number of these teams are within a group in the middle that could beat each other on any given Sunday, as it were.
So who's out of the middle? Who are the elite teams in your mind? New England, I feel you still feel roughly confident in New England, I think, right?
Coming in, the elite teams in my mind were New England, Pittsburgh, Green Bay, and Seattle.
Okay.
And you know, I'll give your guys some credit too, but it's hard not to judge them a little bit based on week one.
I actually, you know, I'm not that shaken by week one.
I don't know that you should be shaken.
I think your team is better than
Yeah, no, look, the Bears defense is professional. Yeah. And it was last year, it was just very injured. I'm not saying that, but I will say, like, if I thought I would get the exact performance from the Bears defense that I got on Sunday, I would have expected last year's Falcons to break 30.
Interesting. Is that fair? I felt like they kind of gutted out a tough game on the road. They did.
I looked at that more than anything else.
You know what I mean? Like, I've seen a lot of Patriot wins along those lines where maybe they didn't score as much as you think, but they won the game.
But that's the point. They didn't score as much as you would think. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Look, if they have trouble scoring against Green Bay, at home on the turf, then I think you can start to wonder. I wouldn't be too shaken.
Okay, to make you happy and stop this debate, I'm going to put Atlanta in that elite group as well.
I think I don't know why everyone is down on Dallas.
Well, I guess part of that was the expected suspension.
Yeah, which doesn't look like it's going to happen now. So I think you got to have them too.
Yeah, you can put them in there. Although their offense, I mean, this is what they did last year, so it's not a huge surprise. But their offense was not overwhelmingly exciting in week one. I will say they, you know, their schedule is not too concerning. Unless you're afraid of Denver's defense, they go at Denver, at Arizona, home for the Rams before they get Green Bay in week five, but then they get a bye and they go out to San Francisco. Like this should be an easy, 5-1 or so.
Is it possible that the entire NFC North is decent?
Yes. I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Although I will say that you saw in that game against Seattle why, if the entire NFC North is decent, you should expect the Green Bay Packers to win 11 or 12 games and easily win the division. Because if the Packers are decent and the other team is not great, then eventually Aaron Rodgers will seize control and win.
Yeah. I think that's fair. The Packers will stumble a few times. I think the Vikings have a chance to push them.
The Vikings looked pretty good last night, and you can't see, this is what I mean with watching quarterbacks play, is say what you will about short passes and Sam Bradford. If you watched him play last night, you cannot deny that he is, I would say, a better than average NFL quarterback right now.
I didn't watch him play last night because I was watching that lousy movie. But
oh yeah, that's right. He did the things you need to do. He made every throw all night long, and look, he obviously was making a lot of short throws last year, but also they had a terrible offensive line last year, and that appears to be somewhat improved. They also have a running back in Dalvin Cook, who looks a lot better than the running backs they had last year.
Yeah, look, is it possible that with the improved elements around him, he's a real NFL quarterback? Yes. I'm not ready to go there yet because he's played on decent teams before.
Well, and he played 1 week against the Saints defense as well. So I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer at all. I'm just saying, again, if I'm talking about a quarterback at 29 years old, which is what Sam Bradford is, he's almost exactly the same age as Colin Kaepernick, I would rather have Sam Bradford. For all the problems I've seen and for all that I'm not thrilled about Sam Bradford, I'm more interested in him than Colin Kaepernick.
I haven't put him in any of the conversations we've had about this, largely because I think it's kind of up for debate. I think it's reasonable to prefer Sam Bradford. I also think it's reasonable to not prefer Sam Bradford, though. It is what it is. I think the whole NFC South or the whole NFC North is decent, and then I think the NFC South is pretty damn decent too. Although the Panthers didn't have a great game against the 49ers. That's another one where you got to the West Coast, you come out with your W, and we'll see. But I think especially
given the way Cam specifically and the Panthers in general have historically played on the West Coast.
Yeah,
You chalk up that W and you move right along. There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm not too worried about them. And then I think we all think Tampa's going to be good, even though they haven't played yet. So
yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the most interesting things about handicapping the week to come, if that was a thing that you were doing, is how many games. I mean, you never know too much heading into week two, right? But in this case, I feel like there's a particularly extreme number of games where you're like, I just don't even know what to possibly expect from this week at all. It seems.
Do you like that feeling? Do you like that feeling of like, I kind of enjoy it of like, I don't know what's going to happen.
It's funny getting, I have that as the Bears are playing Tampa. And I think related to what we just talked about with the Falcons and Bears, it's like how much was the Falcons offense a little down? How much were the Bears actually a competent, decent defense? And we still won't know after this week because we won't really know how good Jameis. I mean, if he totally lights him up, the Bears are probably not great. But chances are we'll be asking similar questions about Tampa and the Bears again after this week, no matter what happens.
I think it's one of the more underrated fun aspects of the league is just that things change enough from year to year that like there's just a lot of like we could come out of week two going like, you know, hey, Rams are for real. They might be a playoff team. You know what I mean? Like, that's a thing we could be saying. We could also be saying like, we're idiots or the Colts are terrible. Like, those are all things that could come out of what we've seen from week one. You know what
about
I mean?
This? I mean, as bad as Scott Tolzien is and as awful as the Colts looked, they're playing an Arizona team where Carson Palmer looked no better than Scott Tolzien, and David Johnson is out for months. So that could be interesting.
It could be. It could be.
Something tells me not how you define much of the country will be getting access to that broadcast. But, you know, that will be unseen outside of Phoenix and Indianapolis. But nevertheless,
this is just a thing, though, that the NFL has. Like, you are not going to say that a Thursday night matchup between the Hornets and the Bobcats, you're not going to be going, well, this could really tell us some interesting things. But you will say that, you know, about the deep level games in the NFL, right?
Well, I will say that about the Hornets and Bobcats, but that's because I'm sick, not because it's reasonable.
Right.
I do think, to get back to another one of your original questions, how excited you are about the NFL season kind of is in a lot of ways determined by how much you enjoy the feeling you're just talking about. In other words, this season is a season where it seems like a lot of weeks we're going to go into it wondering how good are any of these teams and what is going to be the team we thought was terrible that somehow wins.
Right.
I mean, what we saw from Seattle, now look, I'm not predicting this, but what we saw from Seattle, granted against a good team, it's not impossible they go home and lose to the Niners. Both of those teams look terrible in week one, but Seattle, they can't block at all. And I don't know what you can do if they don't seem to have great running backs, and Russell Wilson has no time. I mean, look, they're probably going to beat the Niners because the Niners look like one of the worst teams in the league, but would it shock you entirely based on what you've seen in 60 minutes of football if the Niners were at least in that game?
Well, I look at division games, never shocks me if somebody's in it. But I don't think I'm as worried about Seattle as you are. They couldn't block anybody last year, and they're still a playoff team. So
that's true, but the degree to which Russell Wilson had no time to do anything felt extreme to me.
It was bad. I think their offensive line can improve. I think they have a quarterback who can handle that sort of situation better than many, if not most.
Yeah.
And so like I said, I think they'll be okay. You know, it probably is enough to keep them from being Super Bowl winners.
It certainly is enough to,
I think they'll be okay.
I think it's certainly enough to, in my mind, if I'm power ranking and I'm doing the elite team thing, I'm not sure I have anyone up there besides arguably the Packers and possibly the Steelers. Because I don't know how I can watch what happened to New England. And look, I'm not writing off the New England Patriots. I'm not an idiot. I'm not one of these people that's going to start crying about the end of Tom Brady before it happens. It better be 8 weeks of garbage before I'm going to even mention that, because it's just dumb. Yeah. But I watched a poor quarterback performance, and I watched the team get worked by Alex Smith in a way that Alex Smith has almost never worked anyone. So I can't put them as an elite team right now. I mean, it's circumstantial, it's small sample size, but that's just the facts. And I'm even hesitant to do it with Green Bay and Pittsburgh, because both of them looked pretty underwhelming for big chunks of their games.
It's like, you can't, if you're going to dock the Falcons for struggling with the Bears, like the, you know, Cleveland
had their hands.
Cleveland gave Pittsburgh everything they wanted in that game.
That's exactly right. And I think this is something that you pointed out. Usually offenses are ahead of defenses at this time, which means usually the teams that have competent offenses with a lot of holdovers and a lot of talent, they run up the score in the first week a lot of times. And if those are teams we already thought of as elite, you know, we expected the Steelers to win by 20. And that game was reasonably close into the final minute. We expected the Patriots to at least look impressive on offense, and they didn't. So I feel like the group of elites has dropped to near zero. You know, the Packers shut down an ugly Seattle offense and ultimately broke through a little bit on offense in the later parts of that game. But even they, I don't know. It's hard to look at any performances of the first week and say, here's a truly great football team.
Yeah, well, I agree. And that's why I'm not going to not. It's hard for me also, I think, you know, at this point of the season, you need to be putrid for me to knock. If I thought you were elite, you needed to have been putrid for me to just be like, forget it. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Like, New England's performance doesn't qualify as that for me. It was just
probably
bad.
Probably not.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, that's a bad game. Now, you know, start throwing up 2-3 of those, and then we're talking. But
that's right. That's right. Most of the questionable performances were medium questionable,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we should jump into some other things because
I think we both have to go. Even though we cut out, you know, half an hour of Colin Kaepernick screaming,
he did it again, man. He did it again. Yeah. And I know. Look, I know it's my fault. I'm definitely not trying to talk about this again. But I just have a hard time hearing the arguments for, you know, parroted the arguments that we know are covering up something else, you know, being parroted back. That's not the, yeah, you know, parroted, well, is maybe the wrong word, because I don't think you're just copying something somebody said, but it's a lot of the same arguments to me, and I just anyway, let's jump into what do we want to talk about? Should we talk about You're the Worst?
Yeah, I think we should.
All right. I think this was an interesting. It's really, you know, it was an hour season premiere, but it was basically two episodes, right?
Yeah.
Kind of stuck together.
Uh-huh. Although, in a way that if it was a 45-minute show or whatever, it would have seemed a natural premiere,
yeah,
in two parts, sort of.
If you've been following along with us with You're the Worst, I mean, we're big fans of the show, but I think we both sort of agree that last season maybe not the measure of the others. And so I think it was an interesting sort of the interesting place to find the show this year. You can stop me, by the way, if you disagree with any of that sentiment.
No.
And I thought this was a promising first episode.
I agree with everything you just said.
The one thing that I had a little trouble with, and this is definitely a spoiler if you haven't seen it, and now I'm blanking on names because I'm old, but Keither Donahue.
Yeah, Keither Keither. I don't know, yeah. But I love her so much.
She's great. And what's her character's name? Thank you. But having your two supporting characters hook up seemed to be a cheesy sort of sitcom move. The method of it was kind of funny, but also you could see it from a mile away. It was just like,
agreed. Oh, but
are we pushing
also
this button?
Something.
You know what I mean? We're pushing this button.
I actually disagree with that because it's something I've kind of been rooting for. Because it's been teased. This is not a quick, we need an idea, let's throw this together thing. It's been slowly building. In fact, I believe they actually did make out or something at some point.
Yeah, now I could see them making out like randomly, but like, I don't know. I think this is a thing you do because it's a thing you do on TV, and that sets off an alarm to me.
I think you got to give it a couple weeks. I don't. If this becomes Chandler and Monica, then fine. But I don't think that's what we're in for.
I hope you're right. Look, I know it's not going to be exactly Chandler and Monica, And it's certainly not in the beginning. I'm sure.
But I mean, is this just a B version of the A love story? If so, that's disappointing. But I don't think
that's,
it will be.
That's kind of what it looks like to me. And I think that in the beginning, it's more likely to be spicier and then devolve into the B version of the A story.
It's possible. But again, I'm not sure what we've seen is sufficient to judge it as such.
And I almost wonder if it's not more like Chandler and Monica, but it's more like when Rachel and Joey hooked up. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, well, they're here. Let's put them together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I have higher expectations or hopes or something. I love both of those characters, and I think it has the potential to be a little more complex and interesting.
I also love both of those characters. I think maybe that's why I think I have a problem with this, because I like them separately. And I don't necessarily think that they have like an amazing romantic chemistry.
Well, but that could be that might be part of the story. I don't know. I see your point. I don't think you're crazy. I just am less worried about it going down that road. And I do kind of like the joke that we're playing it around, which is like, wait a second.
We're Jimmy and Gretchen.
We've become the responsible ones.
Yeah.
And really they're not, because as you see their life, like who knows what's going on with Edgar and Doug Benson, which I just love. It's hilarious. Cause
Edgar,
I listen
thank
to,
you for that. Don't get old kids.
I listen to Doug Benson's podcast. I think he's hilarious. And I think the whole concept of Doug loves sketches is hilarious. Like, That's like a special additional inside joke to me almost, but it's very bizarre, and it certainly doesn't seem to be that functional in terms of him actually getting his life together in the way he seems to be pretending to. And Catherine Donahue has no idea what's going on at her job. She's succeeding by pure random chance, always in hilarious fashion, but like, they are not the responsible ones by any stretch of the imagination. They're still the same basket cases they were last season and leading up to this. So I think this will be fun and funny.
Yeah, well, look, responsibility is relative on a show called You're the Worst. I think it's fair
true.
To say. I really enjoyed the Jimmy on the Lamb parts of this episode.
Yeah, well, I think that's why you say it's sort of two separate episodes, is it felt like a bottle Jimmy on the Lamb episode, the first half of it. But I kind of like the juxtaposition of that with the chaos of what's happening back in LA. And, you know, I think the sort of what we're left with at the end is like, he can't stop with the chaos. He misses the chaos. As relaxed and happy as his life on the lam seemed to be, he needs to return to the chaos.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's home. And eventually you return home, I think. I think it'll be interesting to see where this season goes. And
I think we're still very much in the discovery phase in terms of what type of season is this.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And it had some of the trademark, you know, dirtbag comedy that I loved, and also pushed some of the more thoughtful buttons. I think this was, as you said, a very promising season premiere.
Yeah, promising with some worries. that's where
you're
I'm
such
at.
You're such a worry wart.
Yeah, I know. Somebody has to be the responsible one in this pair.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue with that.
All right, I think that's fair. All right, should we? I know there's something else that we're forgetting, so I'm gonna jump in my notes. Oh, the deuce! We didn't talk about the deuce.
I actually wanted to talk about this first when I was watching it, but oh well.
Oh, well. So what did you want to say about it when you were all hyped to jump into the deuce? Which, for those of you who haven't heard, you should listen to other episodes, because we were talking about it for weeks. The new David Simon, George Pelicanos show about Times Square, New York in the early 70s as the smut angle of Times Square starts to explode.
I want to say that I love it. I'm all in. And when we were having our conversation last week or 2 weeks ago about how we needed a new show now that Game of Thrones is off for a year and a half and probably gone very shortly after that, we need Sunday night appointment television, and HBO, as usual, is delivering. There's just no question in my mind that this is going to be a great show.
Yeah, I'm excited. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say I love the acting. I love the way they've set the scene. I love the music. It's TV at its best. It's excellent. And it's got all the stuff you would expect from a David Simon outing. And Franco is the tits. And
the tits, Maggie, are the tits.
There's a lot of tits, couple of dicks. Maggie Gyllenhaal is excellent.
Why do you think – because there are definitely people who do not like Maggie Gyllenhaal. And I don't understand it. She's excellent.
I agree. And so is Zoe Kazan. And I think they both have a weird weird physicality that I find attractive. But they both are a little different.
Yeah. I don't know,
physically. And I think that's a huge part of it. Maggie Gyllenhaal is particular looking. I wouldn't say weird or odd looking because I think she's dynamic and attractive. But she's different looking. And I would say the same about Zoe Kazan, who's also in this. And I actually saw The Big Sick again a couple nights ago. And seeing her in that, you know, the day before I watched The Deuce was awesome.
Yeah, I could see how that might be.
They're such different roles, and she's utterly convincing in each of them.
So, you know, I mean, look, it goes without saying that we are huge fans of The Wire. If it's not the best show that I've ever seen, it's in the top five, certainly.
It is the best show that you've ever seen.
I, you know, at some point, I think I decided that I prefer Breaking Bad.
I don't get that, because I just don't think Breaking Bad is on... I mean, I don't really think anything's on the level of The Wire. And I think of Breaking Bad as distinctly, you know, of the genre of The Sopranos, or level of The Sopranos, which is excellent, but not with the depth of something like The Wire.
Are you thinking it's because of the novelistic scope of The Wire? The thing for me is essentially is that I think Breaking Bad started great and continued to improve, whereas The Wire is amazing and probably better at its peak, but the final season of The Wire was not an improvement over the first few.
Okay, so, no, the final season was not an improvement. That's accurate.
And look, when you're talking about the greatest television shows of all time, when you have one that has no bad seasons, and in fact, only got better and better, and you have one that has an off final season, like that's enough to make the difference to me.
Perhaps. I didn't feel like the final season was really off for The Wire. I wouldn't say it was an improvement. I don't know that I felt
The fake serial killer plot is a real weird point.
I'm looking at it from a broader perspective of The Wire spoke to all these interesting things with great depth and creativity and thoughtfulness.
Yeah, well, the scope of the story that Breaking Bad was telling is not quite as broad as The Wire, obviously, but I think it's certainly approached with the same level of thoughtfulness and depth.
It's just not about as like important stuff to me to do what, and I don't know that The Deuce is either, for the record. And this is we're getting off topic, but the point is The Wire is one of the best TV shows of all time, undoubtedly.
Yes. All right. And, so let me get back to the point I was going to make about that.
Yeah, please.
So it's great. But the thing about The Wire, and this is what I try to tell people when I'm trying to turn them on to The Wire, is that because it's a very novelistic show that is setting up what is a very large grand story. And I think this is doing that too. It can be a little slow for someone who's not used to it, and you have to understand you gotta wade through three or four episodes. The Deuce,
and not just wade through, but lock in and retain information.
Yeah, the Deuce episode one has not really told us all that much about what essentially is going to be the story of this season.
No, it's just setting up character, really.
But it's more entertaining than The Wire, I think, in the way that they do that. And some of that is the subject matter, but it's just not as much of a slog the you know to ramp up
it's
into
glitzier.
It. Yeah, you know what I mean. And that's and absolutely. That's fun. And I'm not saying it's going to be better than The Wire. That's not what I'm trying to say. Because I you know who knows. But
no, but it's splashier
mm-hmm.
than The Wire, undoubtedly.
It's definitely easier to jump in.
And that's true, I would say, of the performances as well. You know, this is no shade to the actors on The Wire because they're almost uniformly excellent, but they're more of a settle in and you know chow down over time.
Yeah.
Whereas what I mean, Maggie Gyllenhaal and James Franco just jump off the screen from the moment they hit it.
Well, and you know, I mean, The Wire was a show with a lot of rookie actors. To be honest,
yeah.
right? You
had a lot of new faces. It, but it's also the nature of the way the characters are developed.
Yeah.
The Wire develops sort of story and theme over character, certainly at the beginning. And over the years, you get to really understand and know those characters in incredible ways. But it certainly starts you with the biggest character being really Baltimore. And although Times Square is certainly at issue here, the characters are James Franco, Maggie Gyllenhaal, you know, the characters are the principal actors.
Yeah, although I suspect the character of Times Square is going to deepen as the show goes on.
No question. In the same way that the characters of McNulty or you know, Lieutenant Daniels did over the course of The Wire, I think we'll get more of Times Square as it goes on. But we do, I think, have a really good understanding of who both James Franco and Maggie Gyllenhaal are. And we also have come to understand pimp culture probably in ways we may not have previously.
Yeah. And, you know, and I don't know why I'm going to hold back on spoiling this, but the last scene. You know, is such a jolt. And maybe because The Hour's been really jaunty and fun. And even
though
you know there's a dark side, when it hits you, it's really like, oh.
I believe they're standing over a dead body in the very first scene of the very first episode of The Wire.
Yeah.
You know? This is, and not that there's a body, I'm not spoiling anything, but this is played differently in that as dirty and grimy as it is throughout, it's definitely the like window dressing version, the window shopper version of dirty and grimy throughout most of the episode. It saves the gut punch for the end.
Yeah. A lot of respect for the characters, a lot of respect for the work, which you don't often see in you know, shows about sex work. So, you know, I just think it's going to be, this will be nutritious and also delicious. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I'm very much looking forward to it.
It could not have gone a whole lot better from my perspective.
All right. We really got to go. So before we get to homework, I did want to share, you know, something from Friday. I mentioned that I was going to go see U2 due to Joshua Tree.
Oh yeah.
And you know, look, anytime you see a stadium show, sound issues are a problem. And I think some people who saw the show had a tough time. I was pretty fortunate to have good seats and be in a pretty good position to hear stuff.
Son of a gun.
When you've got a band that can walk out and play Sunday Bloody Sunday, New Year's Day, Bad, Pride, and then start side one of the Joshua Tree, which if you know that record at all, is a murderer's row of, like, you know, maybe their biggest singles. You know, that is that's like an epic evening. And the visuals done by Anton Corbin and the quality of the visuals.
What does that mean? Well, the visuals, is that like a video screen?
I mean, yeah, like there's a really, they play in front of this really massive, super high def video screen has these really beautifully shot short films, some of which, you know, when they do the Joshua Tree, in fact, at the beginning, they don't use the visuals at all. For those first four songs, they're playing out in the middle of the crowd, kind of elevation style. And then they jump into these visuals, and it's really gorgeous. And it's, you know, you realize this is a band that has been playing stadiums forever.
Right. This is what they do.
Yeah.
They're a professional rock band
that
plays stadiums.
And they may do it better than anyone. And I don't know, you know, I mean, is there a song that's better to hear in a stadium than and Where the Streets Have No Name? Like,
I mean, from my perspective, there are literally hundreds of songs that are better to hear in a stadium than The Streets Have No Name. But I understand what you're saying.
It feels like it's just designed for that sort of communal experience. So, I take it, are not a U2 fan from the from that statement right there.
No, I don't hate U2 or anything. I just don't. I get what you're saying. It's a big song by a big band in a big building, and that's cool.
It's not just that it's a big song by a big band in a big building, but the kind of like hope and like sort of catharsis of it and the way that it builds and like it's just sort of built for that kind of like big statement human interaction. And U2's a band that takes big swings, you know what I mean? And that just plays well in that kind of building. So that part of it was great. The other part that I wanted to share has nothing to do with the show. And I did get to do something similar like this a couple months ago. I think maybe you and I have talked about it. They asked me back then not to talk about it, but they didn't make that request this time. So I'm going to talk about it. We went back, kind of in the bowels of US Bank Stadium, and talked with the Edge for a little bit, and they played us, 6 songs from the new record.
Right.
Which was surprisingly good. I got to hear, like I mentioned, this is the second time I've done this, and I got to hear a few different songs than the first time. Obviously, the last album sort of has tempered your expectations. Maybe the last 2 or 3 albums have tempered your expectations for new U2 songs. And there were no songs in the set newer than Vertigo, I want to say, which is like 10-plus years old.
Right.
But these songs, like, I don't know, man. I think this album actually could be something. Whether it will be received as a hit,
what's the last U2 album you feel like was something?
All That You Can't Leave Behind.
Okay. That's when I was in college.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's been a minute. I'm just saying, keep your eye on the U2 comeback. I'm not saying it's really gonna kill and it's gonna happen and they're back and they're relevant, and like I'm not gonna make that claim, because I just think that's a Herculean thing for a band of their age and stature to accomplish in 2017. But I think it bears watching. That's all I'm gonna say.
Okay.
All right. Should we jump into homework?
Yes. How do you feel about my Netflix assignment idea?
I feel okay about it. Let's see what we've got.
Okay.
Because I think there are a few things. Better Things is returning this week, and I've
very
heard it's
excited,
quite good.
I feel
like
excited.
We should be talking about that.
Yeah, I love the preview. It's like a teaser, but I love it.
There are two things that are of great interest to me, mm-hmm. and I understand that asking you to do either one for homework is the equivalent of you going, hey, I have this new alt R&B singer I'd really like you to check out. So I'm only going to give you one.
I mean, I'll probably do both, but let's talk about it.
So the first one is the National dropped a new record this week.
Oh, right.
Actually, last
that.
Week.
I'll listen to that. That's
fine. But I'd almost rather that you checked out a couple episodes of BoJack Horseman.
Okay.
All right. I know how you feel about cartoons and adult funny cartoons, but I think this show is really good, and I think it's worth talking about. I would like, even if it's a hater's take, I would like your hater's take on it.
So is it new?
Yeah, the new season. Just watch the new season. You don't
new
have to start
on Netflix?
Yeah.
Okay, I have not seen 1 minute, I don't think, of BoJack Horseman. Is that going to be a problem?
I don't think it will be. I mean, it's definitely a show that has some continuing narrative, but I don't think it's going to be too hard for you to keep up.
Okay.
If it is, let me know.
All right.
All right, so Better Things, BoJack Horseman. Do you want to go with one of these Netflix things and we'll call it a day?
I think if I'm going to listen to The National, which I will, and also watch BoJack Horseman, I think you owe me a Netflix film.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I didn't ask you to listen to The National. You signed up for that.
I know. But look, here's what I'm going to go with. There is a movie on Netflix called The Fundamentals of Caring. It's a Netflix original starring Paul Rudd. let me read you the log line or whatever you want to call it. In this inspirational buddy comedy, a young shut-in and his caregiver, the shut-in appears to be paralyzed, and his caregiver take a road trip in search of landmarks, but end up finding hope and friendship.
Yay, hope and friendship. Okay.
It's a dark, it's a comedy slash dark comedy slash drama featuring Paul Rudd, Selena Gomez, and others.
Okay. Let's do this.
All right. The Fundamentals of Caring, now available on Netflix. A Netflix original. BoJack Horseman, also available on Netflix. Originally somewhere else, right? But now is a Netflix property that they're making new ones?
I think it's always been a Netflix show, I believe.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, My Mistake. And, of course, we'll be watching NFL, You're the Worst. And there's one other show coming back this week that I am surprised you have not mentioned. I think we usually have talked about it. Actually, two other, because there's a show that came back last week that we need to watch.
All right. Hit me. Don't hold out.
The last week show that we considered for this week but didn't get around to was Top of the Lake, China Girl.
Yeah, we need to hold off on that.
Why?
Because I missed episodes 1 and 2, and they're somehow not available on demand, and I won't have them on my DVR for like another week, so I need to hold off on that.
That feels extreme, but okay. So I guess we'll hold off.
We'll cover the first four. How's that when once I have them all?
I mean, if that's what you want. Then also, Broad City returns this week.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got to watch that.
Okay. World War One for two.
Okay. That one's easy.
I will be watching Top of the Lake, China Girl, and teasing you with fake spoilers. All
right. Thanks a lot, Dick.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for. That and for Colin Kaepernick debates that we'll later cut out of the podcast.
All right. Glad we could do it. I'm looking forward to next week's Colin Kaepernick debate that you won't hear.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.